My name is Jeremy Grant. Faith Grant is my mom. Ken Grant is my grandfather. I was in Everett, Washington. I'd graduated high school, and it was just after 9/11. It was actually a funny story. A buddy of mine told me that he was going to enlist, and I said, "You're crazy." Anyway, we ended up joining together, because I wasn't going to let him join alone. A lot of it, we talked about a lot of things, and one of the things we talked about was challenging ourselves. Until you have a conversation looking at things like military does, you really don't know a lot about yourself. Challenging yourself. Growing up in a Tlingit household, I wanted to be battle tested. We happened to be in a time of war, and a time where I could do that. I had a lot to learn about myself and a lot to prove to myself, and that was one way to do it. My father-in-law at the time tried to get me on the water to join the Navy. The water was always my peace. I love the water. Love the ocean. And I didn't want to fight a war on my peace. I didn't want that ruined for me. I hate being hot. I hate being sweaty. So I was like, well, I don't like the desert, so we'll go fight there. Then I didn't want to be a support. I wanted to fight. It's Army and Marines. Cold and very long. I remember the first night, they don't put you straight into boot camp. They send you there and they put you in what's called a holdover. And they introduce you to boot camp life slowly for the first week. And then when that class graduates, you move into their place, and then your training starts. I remember listening to them out there exercising at Oh Dark 30, and it was in Kentucky. It was in the middle of winter, and it was cold. And I just remember looking up at the old World War II building they had us staying in, and it was should have been condemned, and it was gross, and it was freezing, and the blankets were itchy, and I just think, what did I get myself into? But then you see these guys, and this is one thing I'll never forget, is they had us standing out at the praying field, one of our first formations. And I remember looking over and I seen these people marching on the road, and they looked just wiped out. They were fully decked out in their gear, had their little, well, we call them moon beams, but they're old school, you know, NOM-era flashlights, and they were all red colored, and the guys just looked like zombies. And I was like, what is this? I found out later that that was the graduating class. That was the people that we took their place, and they were coming back from their FTX, field training exercise. I was the last class to go through of the old school. The beatings and the beratings and the turn you into a man, not be offended type people. So the more and more we got into it, the more and more I understood those people. And more I wanted it. I wanted to finish. There's a ceremony that's done where you're inducted into the Brotherhood, and I wanted it. I remember me walking in that path, that same road. I felt the same that they did walking, and I understood it. A long trek, but I was sure proud. Like, that last mile, when you start hitting familiar ground, and it's just like, you know, I remember this. I've done it. You know, we're almost done. This last mile, it's no problem. Fleeting thoughts from a first day. I remember the instructor of my company, my platoon, was, they called him the Raging Cajun. And I really related to this guy, because he was very low-key. He was very, I don't want to say empathetic, because that's not a feature of them, but I saw a lot of myself in him. You know, he never raises his voice, and that was even scarier. He would always tell me, he said, "You owe me for that, and I'm going to collect." And he did. Boy, he did. We had these plastic M16s that they weighed the same, which is about 7 pounds. They'd have to do these exercises where you hold it in front of you, and then you go straight out, then you go up, then you go behind your head, up, straight out, down. And that's one. That's a count of one. We had hundreds. Hundreds to do. I guess man always pays his debt, to know that it's because you thought you're done, you're never done. We made it through pretty easy. Everybody else got, you know, beat on and harassed a lot. And we never did, and we were probably one of the better performing classes. We thought we'd done it. We graduated, we're in our nice Class A pickle suits, what we called them. We thought we were untouchable. He came in, and we're all celebrating, and he said, "You thought I forgot?" And he collected every one of those that we owed him. I was the last person on my bus to go to Virginia. I was the last person, and I was so tired I couldn't even carry my bags, trying to get on the bus and dragging my bags on the ground, still pouring sweat, and the bus driver came out and helped me. I guess I look pretty tattered. Yeah, I don't know. I respected those guys. When I left there, I kind of thought that was my path. Like, I wanted to be an instructor. But as the generations got more offended, it's not my place anymore. I have a cousin. He has, I think it's called muscular dystrophy. But he's a little bit older than me. When we were about 2 or 3, it took hold of him. And he was put in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. I remember in basic, it hurt. It was so painful. Every day, start the day, painful. It's just, you got to find that reason to keep going. For me, my pain was temporary. Eventually, it will stop. And his pain was forever. You know, there's things in life he'll never do. After I kind of realized that, it was pretty easy. Pretty much breeze through everything in life at that point. And one thing people don't think about when they think of the desert is high elevation. I've been a sea level baby my whole life, so I think Kandahar's at like something like 5,000 feet base elevations, and it's hot. Yeah, walking the half mile when I first got there. Walked the half mile to the store and I had to stop and take 3 breaks. I was like, good grief. That wasn't even in body armor. That was just my rifle and some ammo, and it's like, we've got some work to do. But yeah, it's hot. I don't know, the geography, I'm a history nut, so got to see a lot of amazing historical places that probably not a lot of people will go see. The other thought was just how little they had. No technology, no infrastructure, no schools, no hospitals, barely any roads, mud houses that have been there for thousands of years, their dedication to their religion. It's pretty amazing. I know a lot have tried to conquer there. They also say, too, that the only thing to conquer the Middle East was Islam. I did get to see and set foot in some of Alexander the Great's castles, which was pretty amazing. They still use them. There's actually one outside of Klot that's still used to this day. It's an Afghan army base, which is pretty amazing. I was a mechanic at the time, so we worked very long hours with no days off for months to put our aircraft back together. So when you get there, the other unit's breaking down their aircraft, so you have to slap yours together. You have to maintenance test fly them and all those things and get them ready to go, because the war doesn't stop to wait. So we have missions that we have to meet, things that need done, so we have to hurry. So we were under the gun for a long time. That was my unit's first deployment, so they hadn't quite figured out how to run folks in deployment, and they ran us pretty ragged for the first. I think we shoved off in 2005. I've worked on many aircraft throughout my life, but no, I was a Chinook mechanic. I did the first few months as a mechanic, and some events happened, and I wanted to be up outside the wire. A lot of it is proving yourself. So at least in the Chinook area, I think a lot of them are pretty the same, but there's different levels you aspire to. So when you start, like, privately nothing coming to the unit, you see the flight guys. Yeah, they're in their flight suits and their hair's all done up nice and they have a swagger about them. They know everything. When you get there, you're just like, these people are gods. You're just like, that's amazing. Like, how do they know this? Like, how can they figure out this entire thing? And that's a level you aspire to. At least used to. I don't know if they still do. I did. They asked for Chinook mechanics to be crew chiefs, which is a natural progression. So I had to go. I did what's called a board, sit in front of this intimidating panel of people, and they grill you with all these questions. Whether you know the answers or not, it's not the point. It's to put you under pressure and see what you do. Anyway, I was one of the couple people selected. A lot of people didn't want to do that job in wartime, which I thought was weird. I think that's the best time to do it. I went and did that. A lot of fun, a lot of scary moments, a lot of good and terrible memories. Afghan people, in general, are very small. They're not big people. Yeah, I'm, what, 5'9", 5'10", somewhere in there, and I towered over most of them like I was a giant. But yeah, we interact with them every day, from civilians that are hired to come on the base to clean and do whatever they do. Part of my mission was transportation of troops and equipment around all of Afghanistan. So there isn't one part of Afghanistan I haven't been to. Elections, we passed out the ballots. When we first got there, there was a huge, huge monsoon rainfall. I have a lot of pictures of that. Caused major flooding. Afghan's desert. They don't know how to swim. So there was people everywhere. So we had to go airlift those people out of there before they got swept away. Yeah, there was a lot of interaction with the local populace. Prisoners, POWs, a lot of that. I remember the first time I seen, well, my first mission, I remember, to go pick up the remains from a Humvee that was exploded. So we were going to recover the soldiers. I remember the first time I saw American blood and just how mad that made me. Remember seeing what was left of the Humvee, just being amazed that there was anything left. Good memories. It's a lot of good memories. Brotherhood memories. A lot of games, a lot of jokes. Scary moments. Fight for your life moments. And a lot of sitting around, hurry up and waiting. We've all moved on and moved all over the country. And yeah, it's something. Just because they're not physically here doesn't mean we're not here. So we're always stay in touch, check up on each other. When I first became flight crew, you'd fly over a village and everybody'd run. They thought we were the Soviets. They thought we were there to blow them up. I'm not a big candy eater, so I used to throw my candy out the window. So, because people would send us boxes and things, and I figured they took the time to send it to me, I should, you know, do something with it. So I would throw it out the window, and by the time my first deployment was over, I saw a difference. And then definitely in 2010, there was a huge difference. 2010's mission was a little bit different. Where we were stationed was a lot different. We were completely surrounded by not friendly. It was a total different ball of wax at that point. But yeah, in the major cities and things, it was very different. To find out who your enemy is, you're always on edge. You always have that fleeting thought. Like my shower bag, still to this day, I still have the shower bag. I still use it. It still has the same knife in it. You know, when you go shower, you know, we call them Hajis. It's a derogatory term to them, but yeah, the locals are the ones that clean your bathrooms. So while you're showering, they're there. You know, there's five or six of them, one of you. You know, I don't have my gun. But it's always that thought, you know, always in the back of your mind, backup plan for your backup plan. I have a friend who's a family friend. I've known him since I was a little kid. He was from Bangladesh, Islam, you know, Islamist. And he asked me one time if I hate all Islamists. And I was like, no. We talked a lot about the perversion of their religion and interpretation and how they're using that to brainwash people. It's also why I don't agree with organized religion. For my first deployment, I was married. Actually, about that time was my first marriage was ending. So I came home and said goodbyes and things and proceeded to drink a lot, went back. I took the advice of an old timer and he said, take your leave at the end, towards the end. I waited 6-7 months before I took leave. So by the time I took leave and I came back, we were already breaking stuff down. You know, it was easy street. Yeah, I don't know. I just, I went by my family, met up with some old friends, pirated movies. The local bazaars have every movie you can possibly want, and you can get them all for $1.50. So you get a lot of movies, video games, exercise, a lot of exercise, pretty much all you got to do. Eat, exercise, work, play games, watch movies. I flew around Karzai a couple times. I stood, I called it the Talamo. It's actually our post office on Kandahar, but it was Taliban's last stand. There's still a hole in the ceiling where we sent the big-ass bomb through there. You can still see on the walls are all painted black except for where the people were silhouetted. So you can still see that in there. That's our post office. So I stood there. Right behind that base is Bin Laden's main training camp. It was a stronghold in the south. I stood foot there, which was actually fascinating. I think I was reading this article later. A person interviewing the Bin Laden family, his mom, his brothers, and they were talking about how they visited him at this place in, I forget what year, but I was just reading this article and I was thinking, I was standing right there, like right where these people are talking about, that exact building, I was there. Just a few years later, just weird to read history and like, wow, I walked in that same place. None of the locals spoke English. It was their interpreters. I speak a lot of languages there. English, not really one of them, except for the people at the bazaars. They just speak what they hear. So, hey, buddy, a lot of swear words. Apparently, we teach them all swear words. Kandahar was kind of a fascinating place. There was it's where the boardwalk is now, but it used to be a huge pile of Soviet equipment. So when we went in there and we helped the Taliban overthrow the Soviets and we bombed the crap out of that place, all that leftover remnants was put in a huge pile. There was Hind helicopter parts and all sorts of craziness. Anything you've seen from a Rambo movie is probably in there. Now it's a boardwalk now, volleyball field, but there's a huge parking lot that's just full of all that old Soviet equipment. Because when they left, they didn't take anything. They just left everything. Just huge. We called it the Boneyard, but it's just football fields full of old Jeeps and stuff that they drove. But no, didn't really talk much about it. Being a helicopter guy, I was fascinated by Soviet ingenuity. I mean, give them a potato and a washing machine, they create a Hind helicopter. It's pretty amazing. I sat in a MiG. That was pretty cool. Out in Shindad. It's way east on the Pakistani border. They have a bunch of MiGs laying there. I have to sit in those. I mostly did it through, at the time, you had like messengers. Did messengers. I never liked the phone because you had to sit there and listen to people breathe. So I liked the messengers, liked email. I actually made a life friend. I was always bummed that people would send these letters and things and they'd never leave their address or way for us to contact them, which I understand. I mean, so I promised, I said, the next person I find that has an address in here, I'm gonna write them back. And so this lady sent me, I forget what she even sent me, I think it was a horseshoe, and had an email address in there, which I was like, perfect. So I emailed her back, and it turns out she lived in Everett, and we became really good friends, still friends to this day. I actually lived with her for a while when I was in between houses. Being an American, pretty much anywhere in the world opens you up to the type of racism, I think. Most of the world doesn't like Americans. Pretty real negative opinion of them. So, got a lot of that. But when they find out your service, it's a little bit different. Yeah, that was interesting to see. Rest of the world's opinion. That's pretty much it. Oh, I don't know. When I go to Texas, I'm Irish. When I go to Alaska, I'm native. That was pretty dark after my first deployment, so a lot of people speak in Spanish to me. I had no idea. No idea what you're saying. I was there when we got Bin Laden. Yeah, actually, I saw an aircraft leave Bagram, and I saw him loading up the aircraft, and I was like, ooh, somebody's not waking up tomorrow. And apparently that was, what I had seen was them staging. So going to the staging place where there was Jalalabad. That's where they got their fancy aircraft and went over the border from there. Yeah, I was there for, I seen that. I don't know, the whole base was geared up for massive repercussion. And I think they lobbed like one mortar at us, something that was pretty insignificant. I was actually talking to my mom at the time. She was like, what was that? And I was like, ah, it's just an explosion. The first time you get mortared, you run to the bunker and you're in your helmet and your Kevlar and you're ready to go. And by the 10th, 12th, 15th time, you take your pillow with you. I remember when my first contract ended and the sergeant major said that he wasn't going to let me re-enlist and just how lost I felt. And I pleaded to him. I said, I wasn't. I said, what do I do? So I'm not ready to leave. I don't know what's next. And he ended up letting me re-enlist. It was drugs. I had a drug problem after my first deployment. The military caught me, and I'm glad they did. It stalemated my career for a long time, but at the same time, it probably saved my life. So I'm not ashamed of it. I think context is important. Mistakes were made, things were learned. Without my leadership, well, for one, how terrible my unit was at paperwork was at great benefit to me. Yeah, it probably saved my life. So the bad things that, came my way for punishments and things were drop in a bucket and worth it, as far as I'm concerned. I haven't touched it since, and that was 2006. Back on when you're military back home, boring. Going to war was like, for me, I guess. I can't speak for everybody, but for me, it was like going to Super Bowl. And you train so hard and work to be so proficient, and you build this mindset, then you go use it. It's pretty amazing. It's an amazing thing. But back home is just dial tone, boring, back to training, back to knowing that, like, well, all these people that never been deployed telling you how that this is done while you're on deployment, like, no, we never did that. That's stupid. Why would you do that? There was a lot of that. Just trying to find your place, I guess. Yeah, the world doesn't stop just because we go. So things change. And time for us stands still here. When we come back, it's still a year and a half before. Realize that your kids are bigger and your parents are older and a lot of things happened. So just trying to find your niche, I guess. Identity, that's one thing I always say. It's kind of how I ended up back here. Just lost, needed to find myself again. My cousin Bill makes me go to the veteran things, but I don't know. I think the more I get settled into civilian life, still not settled, the more comfortable I am doing those things. And I remember when I first came back and everybody was telling me thank you for my service and you're a hero and all these things, and I didn't really like it. I still don't like it. And I talked to my chaplain about that, and he says it's really not about you. You know, it's about them. You know, you need to be the hero that they expect, that they think you are. And I disagreed with it, but, you know, I did it anyway. I smile now. The rest of the world isn't ready to hear what we have to say. A real fine line you have to walk. I don't walk it too well. That's why I don't get promotions too often. Cultural values, I think, really helps me. Being here helps me, gives me direction and purpose. If you need help, ask for help. There's a million veterans out there. I know every one of us would help any of them. Doesn't matter your branch or years. Although if you never made it through basic, don't complain to me. I'll make fun of you relentlessly. I'm not sure. I know I did a report with my cousin. My cousin interviewed me. That's one of the things I did while I was on leave. My first one is I helped him with an interview. I have a bajillion pictures, movies. My friend did a couple interviews with locals. Might help you out. I have some pictures, some videos of the first time I was shot down. A lot of that would have to be, what's it called when you block stuff out? Is that redacting? It's raw footage. I didn't believe in the way that media was portraying the war. It wasn't what I was seeing. So I documented everything. I took pictures of everything, videos of everything. First deployment, second deployment, I didn't. I have a lot of that stuff. I think a lot of it just made me mad when I came home. So what I was seeing, and people were like, oh, it's no big deal. It's just what it is. Like, no, it is a big deal. This is what I saw before I came here, like 2 days ago. Guess your reality changes based on where you're at, what you're in. So for us, it's normal. I mean, you look at it, it's pretty near insanity. So insanity for us was normal. That was our normal. Then you come back here and it's just, where do you go with that heightened sense of awareness and obscure sense of what's moral right? So I think a lot of us preferred wartime. Made a lot more sense. At least, I don't know, it's my perspective. I don't know, I would say on the positives, gave me a lot of life experience. It showed me not only what I'm capable of, but that I really don't have limits. You know, you set limits for yourself. Once you remove those limits, develop yourself to kind of walk around those things. Not limits like terrible, horrendous things, but limits like, oh, this report's due and I hate writing. Well, you do this, this, and this, and then the report's done. I'm not an office worker. I never have been. I was never an environmentalist. But I moved back here and here I am, an office worker / environmental worker. Oddly enough, just kind of found my way. I think I can be placed pretty much anywhere and be pretty successful in what I do, just based off of the mentality. Well, another benefit was college. I got several years of college I got to do and got to travel the world, see a lot of things, meet a lot of people. Been to Ireland a couple times, beautiful place. My advice for anybody that's looking to join is be willing to pay the price. None of the benefits outweigh the negatives. My friend wanted to join, and he's like, it's school, it's free school, it's this, that, and the other thing. And I said, it's not free. You pay for every little bit of it, and then some. I have no regrets on what I did or where I did and who I did it for. That's a lot of things like the Vietnam folks had to deal with. And a lot of the kids now that are coming back are having to deal with that of, why are you there? You know, they came back proud of what they did, and now they're getting talked to by, you know, libertards and these other people. Pointless. The pointless war. That's just going to make me mad. But Texas is an amazing place. When I came back, I didn't really care for Americans, especially the way the media was portraying us. And I went to Texas, and it was an amazing experience. We got off the airplane, and it was a group of us coming back from the Middle East on leave. And they rolled out a red carpet from the gate all the way through the middle of the airport. And there was huge crowds of people, and they were cheering, and the whole airport stopped. They're handing out smokes and beers and congratulations and hugs and things. And then you get to Seattle, and there's a lot of behind the scenes in Seattle. I didn't know that until I was in the military. They usher you everywhere behind the scenes, not in public. I guess that's a good representation on different experiences.